Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
I'm lost in space. I'm Brett Filipek.
Does that mean you're Billy Mumy too?
Nice.
That's really good, actually. I didn't even think about that, but maybe I am.
I've never seen the two of you in the same room together.
You've never seen me with William Shatner either. I could be him.
No.
Nope.
Nope.
I could be him.
Getting better, getting closer. You'd have to be a lot more snarkier.
I'll work on the snark here in a little bit.
Okay. I'd like to also thank Jeremy for being our recording host/engineer. And giving us a way to still feed this out to you. Live-ish.
Yes.
or at least not quite dead.
Yeah.
Not quite dead.
Well, it will be soon.
Yeah. We don't want to go back onto the cart.
Clear!
yeah.
All right. So welcome, everybody, I think, mostly. Here we are. What are we doing? What are we talking about?
Well, I've got a little bit of something here for... To bring up IO9, that wonderful website. They come from the future. A little while ago, but I think since the last time we got together to record, they posted up. They have a feature called the Daily 10, and it's sort of like their top 10 list. And they posted the 10 greatest examples of space battle smack talk. And
I'm ready.
The examples. Number one, of course, was from Wrath of Khan.
Of course.
You know, from Hell's Heart, I stab at thee.
I'm laughing at the superior
intellect. Superior intellect. Yeah,
yes,
sure,
right.
Sure.
Okay. But number two was Ivanova's God Sent Me speech from Between the Darkness and the Light.
Nice.
Yeah, and they have the YouTube clip there for there in that. And even beyond that, if you click on the discussion thread and show all, you'll see a number of readers who also posted up Delenn's he is behind me, you are in front of me speech. If you value your lives, be somewhere else. Yeah,
yes.
A number of people posted that up. So I posted a link to that on the Babcast website. And it's well worth looking. It covers, it's not just strictly television. There's a couple animated bits in there, or one of them anyways, and a couple movies and a comic book even. So there you are, yeah.
I'm just happy that Ivanova came in second to Khan. That's
yes.
Some high praise. That's some high praise.
That's exactly right. That's precisely right. So that was pretty cool. I like IO9. I think they give B5 enough props to make me pleased. Maybe not as often as I'd like, but often enough.
Mad props. Thank you very much.
So there's that. So go check that out. Anyways, other than that,
I do have a little bit of news.
Yeah, go ahead.
Today, September 7th in 1955, Mira Furlan was born in Zagreb.
Oh, happy birthday, Mira.
I thought you were going to tell me that Doc hit his head up. I thought you were going to tell me that Doc maybe hit his head on the toilet and invented the flux capacitor, but
Wrong show.
Sorry, wrong show.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to make Mira somewhere in the neighborhood of 27 years old, if I'm doing my math right.
Your math help, but okay. Oh, wait. You're using Hollywood math. Okay, you're good.
Two words, poor math skills.
Nice. Or good drinking skills. Either way.
Zing. Good one.
We also have one other... It's funny because it's true. One other little bit of detail here that we need to clear up. Everyone was all a Twitter when Walter Koenig posted up news that he had met with JMS and said that JMS was in conversation with Warners to get a hold of the Babylon 5 property to create more Babylon 5. Remember that? Everybody remember that?
Oh,
remember
yeah, we helped.
We helped. Yeah, right. Well, as it turns out, JMS goes on record saying that's not the case. Quote, Walter misspoke, he said. I am not in negotiations with WB to develop more Babylon 5.
And these aren't the droids you're looking for.
Precisely. And I think, and from what I've read in a couple other places, kind of what it was about was more to discuss the rights to perhaps create some B5 comics.
I take that.
Sure.
I guess I would too if it's in the hands of a good publisher that's not going to dumb it down. And one of the things I remember reading about the DC run was that JMS would write the scripts and the editor would look at it and they were like, as far as they could tell, trying to aim it at a kid's audience. So they were dumbing down the scripts. That was part of the problem with that. So I think if the writers, whoever that is, whether it's JMS or other writers, have a bit more of a free hand, which is likely, I would think. That might be interesting, but who knows? We'll see. I mean, it's, you know, because JMS is so busy working on Forbidden Planet and Lensman that he doesn't have a whole lot of time for anything else these days.
Wow. You just couldn't let an episode go by without
I did.
That.
Oh, maybe I didn't last week. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Do they realize that comics aren't for kids unless they're by Gold Key and they have Archie characters in them? Seriously? Never mind.
I think they're – yeah, I was going to say. No, because Marvel, one of their imprints, did a really cute Franklin Richards comic that was basically as though he was Calvin and Lockjaw was Hobbes.
But it was a separate imprint.
Well, okay, I guess. Well, so, but it's still a comic for kids. But it wasn't like dumbed down. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was an entertaining read, but it wasn't all.
This is what we need. This is what we need. Remember that campaign, Beef, It's Not Just for Dinner? We need a campaign, Comics, It's Not Just for Kids.
It's What's for Dinner?
No, weren't they trying to do some sort of like steak for breakfast kind of thing? Is my brain making that up, really?
You are making that
one
up.
Yeah. I think you've really.
There was something that was not awesome. Just for breakfast. I think it was. I don't know.
Anyway, there's.
I do know that they're retiring pork the other way meat.
Really?
So I guess they are actually. I guess it means we can't use spoon the other gray meat anymore.
Oh man, so many zombie jokes that go along with the other white meat that just we're gonna lose that.
Yeah, or what's gonna happen is people of a certain vintage will be the only ones who get that joke.
Oh man, we have to come up with a whole new line of long pig jokes. Damn it!
Right.
Yeah, all the kids will, and we old timers will go, I don't get it. Back in my day, it was good enough to say pork the other way meat.
Or I used to say that to some girls back in college. I'm just saying.
Whoa!
Anyways.
Okay, I think it is time to take a break.
We're going to take a really quick break and come back with some deep geeking on an unproduced Crusade story called Value Judgments.
Hi, this is Kevin Batchelder. and this is the Saturday B movie reel.
Do something. Shoot it. Shoot it.
That's about describes it, yeah.
All right, everybody stay here.
We look specifically at the Sci-Fi Channel's original movies. You know the ones. The ones that air on Saturday night.
Be known throughout the ages as an instant classic.
We need a bigger gator!
Limb cutting, yes. And blood squirting from...
Flying limbs, I called it in my notes.
What could go wrong?
We look on a regular basis at the movies as they come out, and since there have been over 200 of them, we do go back and look at many of them that are now out on DVD. By this point, I had completely forgotten any semblance of seeing if this actually makes any sense from a plot point of view. So come on by, get involved, and have some fun.
Check us out at SaturdayBMovieReel.com.
Our future depends on it. Make it safe.
And we're back for some deep geeking. Oh, I'm becoming more and more intrigued about the universe we were going to see in Crusade based on some of these unproduced scripts.
Yeah.
And it just causes me to shake my fist and rail at the universe.
Wow. Wow. You're going to rail at the universe. Oh, wait, so we're talking about value judgments. Is that what it's called, right?
Or yes.
Value. Okay.
That is correct.
All right. Fantastic. I just want to make sure I read the right one because, never can tell with me. And by the way, it's from the Florida Orange Juice Growers Association. It's not just for breakfast anymore. That's where the slogan came from.
Yes.
Anyway, I couldn't let it go.
That's all right. Thank you much. Thank you for the help.
Yeah. So, I will agree with you. What I really, really liked, and maybe it's just because when I was reading the script, I could just picture it in my head, but the dialogue that was Bester's in this episode, it came across. I could literally see Walter Koenig doing the role, how he would do it, and really, really made me miss the fact that we never got this episode.
Yeah.
Well, for those of those listeners not in the know, perhaps we should give a quick synopsis of what this episode is about.
Okay. Also, for people who are listening live, there is a summary of Value Judgments over at isnanchordesk.com.
There you go.
So go over there now and then follow along with the rest of the show.
Or go over there now while you're following along with the pre-recorded segment of our show.
There you go.
It all works.
Whatever.
So in this particular episode, which was ready to go into production, they'd even contacted Walter Koenig. And contracted Mike Vihar to direct it in February 1999. Yes, it was that close. It was that close to being produced. This is written by Fiona Avery, and the episode opens with Excalibur coming alongside a space station that's sort of a freebooter kind of thing. And in order to investigate a lead that Excalibur's got, they basically have to either the governor of the colony wants Gideon to basically pay a fee, as it were, but it's obviously a bribe. Well, Gideon, in typical Gideon fashion, gambles and wins in order to be able to do some exploration. Well, they find something, and it is some kind of
It's like a door.
It's like a door. It's like a door. It's like a door cut into a surface. And it turns out that this thing, while it has an inscription saying that it has promised to enrich anyone's life, it's protected by some sort of psionic shield,
mm-hmm.
and kills a couple people who are trying to monkey around with it. So Gideon assigns Matheson with Chambers and Eilerson to take a look at it, and of course to be extra careful. And it's extremely difficult. Matheson estimates it has the mental force, if you will, of like a P10, and Matheson's only a P6 or P5. Well, the folks at this station say, well, there's a telepath hanging around. We don't bother him much, and he leaves us alone, a guy named Al. tell you where he is. Well, it turns out Al is, of course, drum roll please, Al Bester. That's right. You guessed it. And so he kind of knows that the Excalibur crew is coming because, you know, he's telepathic. He can sense them coming a mile away. Eilerson has no problem. Basically, they're you know, when they know it's Al Bester, Matheson basically wants to take him into custody immediately, and so we can't do any dealing with this guy. Gideon is not too sure. Eilerson doesn't give a rat's ass. Mm-hmm. If he can help us, what's the difference?
I think it's important to note, though, that why somebody wants Bester taken into custody in the first place.
Yes, there was a telepath crisis.
Depending on how you call it, or depending on who won it. Right?
Right. As Bester points out, it wasn't a crisis, it was a war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so is that what they're calling it, is a crisis? Well, he says, I'll make you an offer. I'll help you out. I'll cut through this block, but you're going to take me but in exchange, please carry me to a rendezvous point where I can meet some people. He says, you know, he's kind of been on the run and he feels like he's sort of outstayed his welcome here and it's time to move on. So while the Excalibur crew are in Alfred Bester's quarters discussing this, Bester is looking at a little tracking device of some sort, which indicates that somebody or something is getting close. And so he pops back into the room and says, okay, well, guess what? The deal has changed. You know, you either take me to the rendezvous point that I have for my contacts and I'll still help you. But if you don't, or if you decide to take me into custody, I will sing on the witness stand and imply, you know, and basically make Matheson implicit as a co-conspirator in any crimes that I, Alfred Bester, have been accused of.
Slimy bastard.
Well, and here's the thing. But again, it should be noted that Matheson and Bester, they did have a brief history that they touched on, you know. So it's not within the realm of impossibility that just the mere implication that, hey, it's not like Bester could just simply say, I knew that guy and he was with me, and it'd be baseless. They did have some history, so they could call it a question. Yet maybe there was something that happened.
I'm not calling into question whether or not they had a history. It's one of those, you know, I'm trying to save my skin here, and if my skin gets flayed off, so will yours.
I think, you know, when I first read the script, though, you know, my first thought was briefly thought, well, you know, Matheson could always come back and say, well, no, I didn't. No, it wasn't. He did not. You know, but it was more of the fact that just the mere implication that, yes, Bester could prove that they did know each other, and that just by itself is guilt by association is what I meant by that.
Right, yeah. And it's indicated
people, and that tells you how big of trouble Bester must be in.
Yes, right.
And that's where I was going with that was simply just the implication of being anywhere near that guy was something that to be avoided.
Correct. Right. Right. And it's mentioned in the script that Matheson briefly investigated a career with the Psy-Cops and decided it wasn't for him. But yeah, even at that point, you know, sure, Bester could say all kinds of stuff. So at that point, our intrepid crew is sort of over a barrel. Although, again, some like Eilerson is like, what does it matter? You know, Eilerson's position is kind of the end justifies the means. So they go to this artifact. Bester opens it up. He breaks through the Psylocke. Inside is a bubbling spring of water and some scrolls. Well, they dip into the water to take some samples and grab some rocks, and the door starts closing in good Indiana Jones fashion, and Eilerson grabs a scroll and barely makes it out with his skin intact.
And his hat.
And his hat. Yes, there. You can't forget the hat. Absolutely. And so they head back to Excalibur to do some investigation. Meanwhile, on the station, some of the local yokels They're not too keen on having Earth Force people poke around, and so they decide to basically beat the snot out of them. Mm-hmm. And in the process, during this fight, Matheson, one of the locals, gets the drop on Matheson. And before Matheson knows or can react, the guy basically clutches at his brain and falls over dead. And as the shot is described, as he falls, in the point of view of the camera, you see Bester standing behind him. And it was obvious that Bester's blasted the guy with a psychic mind fry.
Mm-hmm.
So they leave the station. Dr. Chambers is analyzing the waters and all the rest. Eilerson's analyzing the scrolls. Matheson confronts Bester and he says, "Well, why did you save my life?" And Bester says, "Well, you're a telepath. You know, we're part of the same family." And Matheson says, "Yeah, but you did some things. You've killed other telepaths. You've certainly killed mundanes. What about that?" And Bester again takes the position of that, you know, history is written by the winners. You know, they accuse me of war crimes, but if we were victorious, I could say the same about them. And he's running because the mundanes do not understand this. And they will never be able to understand why he's a hero and not a villain.
Mm-hmm.
So they drop him off in the middle of nowhere in hyperspace and fly off. Now, Eilerson we'll get back to that. I know where you're giggling. We'll get back to so Eilerson is, as they're waiting for the Chambers is working on the analyzing the water and whatnot. Eilerson deciphers the scrolls and turns out that it is the spring of water is the most powerful analgesic ever in the universe, and that the civilization that had discovered it and harbored it had evolved beyond the need of physical bodies, and they left it behind shielded for those who would be able to use it. Those who could get through it would be worthy of using it, and it's theirs. And so Chambers says to Gideon that it's a good thing because this stuff, it's the most powerful pain reliever they've ever discovered. It'll be great if they don't find a cure for the drug plague. At least it'll help alleviate symptoms and suffering and that sort of stuff. Well, meanwhile, Bester is picked up in the middle of hyperspace by a Psi-Corps battle wagon.
Mm-hmm. Or as it was described in the script, was it a death wagon?
Death wagon, yes.
Which I loved the name of, by the way. I'm gonna name a boat that.
Death wagon. Well, it also, I mean, there's, well, yeah, it kind of calls into question, you know, Bester's, you know, oh,
his
poor
story.
Misunderstood me. Yeah, exactly. And he's you know, as he's talking to the Psy cop who meets him in the docking bay, it's like, well, you know, this cuts both ways. They can't come searching for us because, you know, to do so would call into question why they'd be looking, and the government doesn't want to admit that they're out there. And, you know, that leaves, you know, that's the beginning of a beautiful thing, as Bester yep. says. The other part of it is back at the station, back at Tachi Station.
Looking for some power converters?
Well, kind of, yeah. Two mysterious figures arrive at Bester's quarters to find it empty. And one says to the other, well, you get to talk to Top Dog because I don't want to talk to the Top Dog. So the one guy calls up and says, tell Mr. Garibaldi he has slipped through our fingers again.
Mm-hmm. I liked that. So, I did like that little bit at the end.
Yep.
So that's it in a nutshell, folks. So to the meat of it, good and bad. So Brett, what you said earlier, I agree with you completely. I think Bester's dialogue is spot on. I could hear Walter Koenig delivering every line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really could. And just even the way they described the scenes when they were first, you know, because I don't know if people have read scripts, but when you read scripts, the writer of the script, he puts in a lot of things like, you know, from this point of view, go from here to there, and gives the director kind of what his vision was. And when you read it, it just reads like how you would expect Bester to be introduced, you know, starting at his feet, you know, going up in you know, his face always in shadow until, you know, till he opens the door and, you know, and everybody gets to see him for the first time, you know. And of course, I mean, when I first sat there and they first said in the script, you know, oh yeah, we only have one Teep on this whole colony and he lives way out in the boonies. His name is Al and nobody likes him. You know,
yeah.
The first thought I had was Alfred Bester.
You know? Did you? I'll be perfectly honest. It took me a moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was the first thing I thought, that it was Alfred Bester, you know, because, yeah, right. because I couldn't envision who else it would be. When they said Al and a Teep that nobody liked, you
know, I will admit it took me a minute to get there when they said, let's go see this Al. And I'm like, wait, Al? No.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So I thought that was, you know, again, just but I could see the whole thing going down the way it did. I think the only part really of the whole episode that I wasn't thrilled with, it's going to sound dumb, but there was some dialogue that went down during the fight scene,
mm-hmm.
between, I think it was between Gideon and Thug Number One, as he was described in the script. I don't remember what the dialogue was, but it just struck me as odd. Like if you're going to sit there and put exposition someplace in the middle of a fight scene.
A fist fight, yes.
Why are you doing this? Swing, duck, you know? It's like, because, swing, duck, you know? Right. I mean...
What the hell do you want? Thug Number One. We want the loot you came here for. We're not letting Earth Force scum take anything valuable off our planet. Throwing a punch.
Yeah, Gideon,
we don't have anything.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, really, of all the times to have the exposition, I was like, that would have had to have been rewritten because that was just pretty darn cheesy. But,
yeah.
Right. But you know,
if the thug had said that line before the first punch was thrown, I think it'd have been all right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, put your exposition in before, and then have your big fight scene, and you know, blah blah blah. I will say one thing that should be also stated was in the very beginning of the episode, IPX was already planet side, at the big vault door with a couple of you know, we'll call them
shirts.
You know,
technicians,
shirts. Yeah, red shirts,
yeah.
And, you know, for some dumb reason or for some odd reason that, you know, they got mind fried and nobody knows why. And that's when they came to the conclusion it's a psychic lock on there. And they bring Darina, right, down to the planet who basically sits there and says, looking at this lock, you know, this lock is designed to never be opened. It's really just there to occupy your time so that it distracts you and leaves you completely susceptible. You're concentrating so hard on the lock, it leaves you susceptible to having your mind fried no matter who you are. That part, you know, again, so that's where they introduced this whole concept that a P10 can fry your brain and turn it into – you can have you cause strokes and stuff like that, you know, cerebrally turn you into mush. And then to have Bester do that later on in the episode – you know, you kind of get the sense of really, for me, I got the sense that, okay, now I see the connection here. I see how this all goes together. But I loved Bester's explanation at the end of, you know, why'd I do it? Because you're a telepath.
Yeah.
This is a psychop is who I always am. It's who I'm always going to be, no matter what. You'll never take that out of me.
And he even uses the word conditioned.
Yes.
You know, there's a pause there. He goes, it's what I'm conditioned to do.
Right.
Which I thought was really – was really, really interesting.
Yes. For Bester, that was a telling choice of words. I don't know. Maybe it's him being on his own after the dissolution of Psycor, after – in the, you know, just having to deal with the aftermath of – his side losing the war, that he frankly never entered his mind that the telepaths would lose that war. That his side,
right.
It's just like, I mean, it literally is a parallel with what we saw happen in season 5 with the telepath colony on B5. It never entered his mind that that would be an option that they would take. Right.
It never
entered his mind that telepaths could lose to mundanes. or that some telepaths would not be on his side.
There's an exchange there toward the end after as they're taking Bester to his rendezvous point. Bester asks Matheson, "What's it like to be in Earth Force?" And Matheson says, "It's wonderful. I was not happy in the Psycor. Yeah. I'm happy here." And Bester says, "You're happy despite the discrimination, the distrust." And Mathis says, "Actually, I'm more trusted here than I ever was in the Corps. My commanding officer, my team, they never wonder if I'm going to be going to betray them. On the Excalibur, I don't have to prove my loyalty. With the Corps, my loyalty was always tested, always questioned. The Corps was so paranoid." And Bester replies, "We had to protect ourselves from people on the outside who didn't understand us and people on the inside who refused to be a part of us."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know about you, but it really made me wish to God that they'd had some. We got to see some of that telepath war. I mean, because really that just must have been ridiculous to watch, you know, and ridiculous to go through an experience. And it was kind of a bummer that we never got to actually see that. But, you know, again, one of those things where there was never any doubt the telepath lost. We all knew that. But to sit there and see how it had to go down.
Right.
Interesting. And what I always wondered, especially there at the end, right, when they had the Garibaldi thing, when you had, you know, Mr. Garibaldi, you know, tell Garibaldi that we missed him again. You know, it made me think if there's any time to sit there and target somebody, it's when there's open warfare. And yet somehow Garibaldi still couldn't get the job done during an open war with telepaths, right? And, I mean, how crafty must Bester be to sit there and protect it? Does this guy have to be? I mean, not just the skeletons in the closet, you know, that he must know about, but probably helping bury half the bodies. You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw one thing out there. It's very, very hard to sneak up on a P-12.
Well, true. Right. Well, no, that's true.
But Brett, you make a good point. But I think it goes to this is what I think kind of answers the question. Is I think the reason it was so difficult, and I can't wait till we start talking about the Psycor trilogy, because it gets to some of that again. But I think the reason it's hard to get Bester is because he knows no limits. And here's I'm going to read this little bit of toward the beginning when they first meet at Bester, and I'm trying to determine what to do, whether, you know, do we bring him to the archaeological dig, let him open it up, you know, make the agreement with it. And Matheson is basically like, "No, look, he's a criminal. He's a war criminal. We need to take him into custody. We'll wait here a few days before the Corps can send out a proper representative." You know, Gideon says, you know, "We'll wait and get help." He says to Matheson, "However you want to handle this, it's your people, so it's your call." And then Bester comes out from the room where he was waiting, and he goes, "I've decided. I'd like to help you out. If not for your people, then for the thousands of telepaths that will die on Earth if we don't find a cure to the Drak plague. So I've come up with a proposition that will make the decision easy for you." And Gideon says, "But we've already made our decision." And Bester says, "Then you've made the wrong one. You will take me with you. Did you think that I'd let you argue all this time so you could simply decide, no, let's turn him in and go about our business quietly? That's the right thing to do?" He says, "Don't worry, I won't rewire your minds to a different decision. As I said, I am running out of time. My enemies are on the move to find me again. If you don't take me with you and I am captured, I have no qualms about naming Lieutenant Matheson as one of my conspirators during the telepath crisis. I assure you that anything I am found guilty of, torture, conspiracy, or murder, I will make absolutely certain that he is implicated as well." And I think right there, that's how do you deal with somebody who has, in an instant, you know, there's not even an exchange at that point between Matheson and Bester, not of any depth. You know, Matheson is already, you know, "I recognize Alfred Bester. He's a war criminal captain. We need to take him in." This isn't, you know, Bester is just all about saving Bester's skin. And he instantly goes to the nuclear option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't let the situation escalate to the point where he feels like he's in a corner. He just looks at it and goes, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to put them in the corner.
That's true.
And by this time, he already knows that he's running out of time. His pursuers are closing in. So right. He's like, you know what? I'm not going to waste any more time because I don't have any time to waste. I understand that. I understand the, okay, you're going to DEFCON whatever. I'm going to DEFCON zero here.
I'm going to DEFCON infinity.
Yes, I'm turning this volume up to 11 now.
Yes, right. Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah, that's precisely it. And when you know, our heroes, because they're heroes, you know, have a certain moral compass. You know, Max Eilerson notwithstanding in this particular instance. And Dorina, too, to a certain degree. You know, her whole thing is like, you know, whatever he did doesn't matter to me. Because not from any moral standpoint. It's just that happened on another world at another time.
Yeah, another world, another war, another race. She's like, what do I care? He can help us get in. Let's go.
Right, precisely. That's exactly right.
And I have to say that the Dorina's dialogue,
right?
Bester's dialogue, and the way Gideon handled his settling the wager, or the challenge rather, was the dialogue in those areas was so spot on. I heard their voices saying those lines in my head. The whole thing with Gideon, it's like it's a Friday night. I never lose on a Friday night. That was awesome.
Yes.
I will say the Dorina's dialogue regarding how she got on the planet was like, I loved that, right? The, you know, technomages, they got, you know, a half a mile of wiring inside them. You know, right. If I don't want you to see me, you're just not going to see me, you know, and that's just because I can do that. That's my skill. And I don't need all sorts of fancy technological tricks. I can just do it. I loved that dialogue because everybody was surprised that she was there. Like, where'd you come from?
Right. Yeah.
You know, you weren't on the shuttle when I left. Yeah, I was, but I didn't see you. So I was there, you know, that was awesome. You know, it really, really makes me wish we had seen this one, because I think it would have just really, if they had a few more episodes like that, we probably would have had a lot more episodes of this show, to be honest with you. I just wish, and I know we talked earlier about the whole, we talked weeks and weeks and weeks, or maybe months ago, about the whole, you know, when they brought Dr. Franklin in, right? And we talked then about the whole bringing people in from the past to try to connect things up and, you know, extend the universe, and was this a good idea? Was this a bad idea? I think we kind of came down on the whole, you know, I think we were split on it actually, on whether it was a good idea or a bad idea. And I think we all kind of agreed that it has to be done right. I think this episode, it would have been done right.
Yes, I agree. And really the biggest issue I have with this episode, actually comes with the MacGuffin, if you will, the archaeological item, the super potent water that heals everything. And it's not like I want everything to be a downer. It's not like I want every episode to be a near miss, like in Appearances and Other Deceits, you know, where the aliens like, I know what you're looking for. I know where to find it.
Right.
But this just seemed really kind of cliched, and I guess it's part of it is the scroll thing, you know, it's protected by, because this is where it doesn't make sense. It's protected by this mind melting psionic field, okay, and the scroll says that if you could get through that, then you're obviously worthy of this. Well, why? Why does that mean you're worthy? What if you're just really – what if you're Alfred Bester?
Right, right.
You know?
Good point. You're not worthy. It just means you're a really good telepath.
Right, that's exactly right. And then the whole, we've evolved beyond the need for physical bodies, so we leave behind the waters of life.
The voice
and we wrote it down on a scroll as opposed to a psionic blast that'll burn into your brain. You know, maybe that's the thing. You know, if they'd been receptive to it, then they would have got the message. Oh yeah, look, instead of struggling against it, we just kind of like relax. Blah blah blah.
So does that mean that the last person to convert from physical body to energy body was the one who had to write all the scrolls?
Hey, yeah, dude, right? Look, there's before like you leave your straggler. Body behind. Oh man, do I have? Yeah, yeah, you got to.
Slow poke.
Right.
You know. But
it's like the story of Ping. You know, you're last on the boat. You got to write the scroll.
That's right. That's right.
I don't want to scroll.
Were you? I will tell you the one. I did have this brief momentary flash when they sat there and described it was, you know, telepathic block. You know, we've evolved beyond the need for physical bodies. Blah blah blah.
Right.
I briefly thought, were these Vorlons? You know, because Vorlons clearly value telepaths and the value telepaths bring. And, you know, they evolved beyond the need for physical bodies. And literally I thought to myself, was this like some benevolent Vorlon out there that left this behind?
Yeah, instead of you're the last one to write it, it's like, come on, we're evolving. Hold on. You're right. What are you doing? You're not leaving something for the younger. No, not me. Uh-uh, no.
Nope.
Oh, no, that scroll? No, I don't know how that
happened. No, you're right. You know, it was interesting in that scroll deck. We don't know where this water comes from, but we just know it works. Okay.
Yeah, right.
You know. But,
we don't know where – seriously, Mom, we don't know where this case of beer came from.
It just showed up. You know.
Can you imagine the beer or the tequila that you could make from that water?
Yeah, you'd never get a hangover.
I was just thinking, no hangovers.
Dude.
It was, I think,
you know, Summer, oh my God, that's exactly what these people didn't want to look like. That's what I'm talking about. Just cause you can get through the block doesn't mean you're worthy of having it.
Yeah.
Dude, we can make the most awesome tequila with this.
Yeah. We'll use it for bong water.
Wait a minute. That would cancel. I don't know. That would cancel out the. Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We hit tangent time.
Yeah. Very true.
Right.
Very true.
Right. So I think as we said before, I think the witticisms exchanged during the fisticuffs would have had to have been rewritten. I think they would have looked at the dailies on that one and go, oh, wait a minute.
This is dumb.
Yeah. We need to change that. And I don't know that they would have or could have changed some of the business with the elixir of life water. I think that's just one of those things that you'd watch the episode go, meh, okay, whatever.
No, I don't think so. I see the water and the stones, since she saw it still had some analysis to do. I put that in the same category with the art and the music. That the other guy,
okay.
That they got from the other guy. I it's one of those things where this isn't the one true solution to the overall problem, but it's one piece of the puzzle that could lead to a bigger solution. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Do you have any emails for us to go over?
I got a couple little things here that we should share. Let's take a break and come back with that.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Really quick break and come right on back.
I'm Michael R. Menengate.
I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Michael Stackpole.
And I'm Brian Brown.
Join us for an exciting romp through literature and books.
romp.
We're not romping.
We're supposed to be cool.
That's smooth. Right. Okay. It's the cool.
It's the smoothing sounds.
The smoothing sounds.
I don't know, but romp just brings forth images of Michael in tights, and I'm so not going there.
Which Michael?
It doesn't matter. Neither one would be very good.
If you would like to join this thing that we do every week, it's called Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Take two. Welcome to Dragon Page, cover to cover, where the elite meet to discuss literature.
Okay, let's go back to the tights images.
Yeah.
Dragon Page, cover to cover, where you'll never know what you're going to get next. And welcome back for more Babylon Podcast. Tim has a bunch of
a
plethora.
Not quite a plethora.
Cornucopia.
Smattering. No, this is more of a smattering in this case.
Of emails.
Yeah. We got, Summer, I'm going to toss this one to you.
Uh-oh.
I know you've seen a couple, but we've gotten a few more. Some people have been having some issues getting the episodes either through RSS feed, through iTunes, or off on the side. And without getting into individual specifics, is there a hint that you can pass on to some of these people so they can listen in to some of the older episodes from years past?
Yes. On the sidebar of the website, BabylonPodcast.com, you will see a list of RSS feeds that say season 1, season 2, season blah, blah, blah. Those are RSS feeds for entire Babylon podcast seasons. So season 1 is actually episode 0 through episode 53 or 54, I believe, from February to February, counting one calendar year of the show. So if you grab that RSS feed, go under the advanced menu in iTunes where it says subscribe to podcast, you can actually paste in that RSS feed in there, subscribe to that RSS feed, and that RSS, that it will actually bring up that entire season in your podcast section for you. So you can do season 1, season 2, season 3, season 4, season 5, and pretty soon season 6. Just because season 6, you'd get all of season 6 in whatever currently is in the iTunes store. So yeah, we had set those up a couple years ago, but I realized that it's kind of low down on the sidebar and not a lot of people notice it or realize what it's for. So in the wake of having redone the websites for Slice of Sci-Fi, Dragon Page, Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas, Hush Y'all, and Zombie Channel, Babylon Podcast is going to undergo a slight facelift, maybe sort of clean all of that up, make it a little bit more easy to read.
All right. So there you go. You got all that? There's going to be a quiz later on, folks.
I'm going to fail and I do this show. Are you kidding?
I hear it fresh every week. All right, here's an email to us. This comes to us from Colin Ford, who says, "Hi, B5ers." Says, "Well, that's every episode from B5 and Crusade done. Congratulations, quite an achievement. I hope there's something else in the pipe. Of all the podcasts, I must say that I did find the Babylon 5 podcast lowbrow, immature, and Neanderthal-like, and I loved it. Personally, my babe would have to be Ivanova. It was great that you even managed to get an entire podcast out of Babylon 5 hair, or lack of, in Garibaldi's case. I do have one observation to make about the Day of the Dead debate. Like some of you, I have reservations about this episode, but probably not for the same reasons. It was only the transportation of part of the station to the Brakiri homeworld that I had an issue with. Even if you take the metaphor that advanced technology will seem like magic, which works so well in Doctor Who, the Brakiri never showed any evidence of having that level of technology. Once you get past that, it's a perfectly fine episode. I did ask Mr. Gaiman via Twitter which was the more difficult to write for, B5 or Doctor Who. He actually replied that Doctor Who was harder to write, but he found the end result more satisfying. And The Doctor's Wife is one of the best Doctor Who episodes I've seen in a while. Anyway, congrats to the production staff for making you sound so good, and here's hoping there's more to come in the future. Well, Colin, thanks for that. Yes, hats off to all the people who have ever done production for us. Obviously, Michael R. Menengay, Brad Boyer, who for many years, especially in the Tim's on the Landline era, did the editing. And I think I don't think the hearing has ever come back into his right ear quite properly. And now Jeremy, who is behind the scenes and twisting the knobs and all the rest. So, yeah, those people have had a big hand in getting you the podcast that you enjoy so much, and we salute them.
But we do have more to go over. I mean, and so keep listening, because it's just because we went through all the episodes doesn't mean we're done.
Well, and we still got Legend of the Rangers, but there's still a handful of unproduced scripts that we're going to discuss, and a couple other things that were treatments for scripts that we're going to go over, and some that I know some people have heard of, and some that you haven't heard of unless you've got some of the other voices from the B5 script team. There's still some material there, guys. So don't give up on us yet.
Not to mention the novels and the comics and the collectibles. Right. I think we have guests lined up, people who have volunteered to cover the collectible card game. I believe Edmund has done the Epstein thing from the back of the room, going for the Psycor trilogy.
Yep, and because we have Jeremy behind the board and handling production stuff, we will be able to have a proper conversation about that, I think, as opposed to some of the other workarounds we had in mind. So, looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
Indeed.
Hey, you know what? I'll save that for next time.
Okay.
So there you are.
Is that it?
That's pretty much it for the email. We're accruing voicemails, and we'll be having a feedback-a-palooza here in the next couple episodes. So keep sending in voicemails and emails.
Fantastic. I look forward to whatever people tell us and making fun of us, because really that's really what it's all about, making fun of us at this point. Or me, just making fun of me.
Yes.
I'm good with that. Well, cool. Very nice. Thanks, everybody, for the emails. Keep them coming.
Yep, keep them coming. And don't forget to call in the voicemail line. Gary, we're going to need you to make sure that we don't lose our phone number. And other folks, too.
Well, between he and Neil. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like always, the website, I just had a big brain fart.
Our
website is babylonpodcast.com. We still have forums over at farpointforums.com. Go check them out. Not sure how busy they are right now. I haven't been there in a little while. As always, email us.
They scare Babylon. Me.
They scare you, really?
Yeah.
Email us at babylonpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also use the contact form on the website. You can send us an email, a comment, a joke, whatever, a news lead, go for it. And as always, our voicemail number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year that Jeremy came to save us all.
Woohoo!